How many of you have ever made a good decision? Now, remember, she's sitting right by you. Good decisions. Anybody? How many of you have ever made a bad decision? Now, remember, she's sitting right by you. There's some bad decisions. 1955, Sam Phillips of Memphis, Tennessee, sold RCA Records his exclusive contract for a relatively unknown singer who he said had no future. Anybody know his name? That would be Elvis Presley. 1938, Action Comics introduced Superman. He was the creation of Joe Shuster and Jerry Siegel, who believed that some money in the pocket was more valuable than a comic character in a book, sold their rights to publishers for a total of $130. Bad decision. How about Pepsi? When Pepsi started marketing its products in China a few years back, they translated their slogan, "Pepsi brings you back to life." The slogan in Chinese read, "Pepsi brings your ancestors back from the dead." How about Coors? Put its slogan, "Turn it loose," into Spanish, where it read, "Suffer from diarrhea." And I love what General Motors did with the Chevy Nova. They couldn't understand why in the world such a well-designed, economical car didn't sell good in Mexico until they discovered that "no va" in Spanish means "it doesn't go." Bad decisions, bad decisions, bad. I've gotten to where I've gotten today from good decisions and bad decisions. And when it comes to obeying God and the decisions I make to do what he says and to follow his way, there are some bad decisions that you can never recover from. And the character that I want to look at today in the Old Testament, it's probably my favorite story in the Bible. It's just got so much cool stuff in it. And it's a character named Naaman. And Naaman's life was changed because of a good decision he made. So we're going to do some reading, okay? I went to India in 2007 and taught at a Bible college for about 10 days. Gave me some young would-be preachers. It was so awesome. And they wanted me for 10 days to talk about this story in that we're going to read today. 10 days. So we broke it apart, and it's an awesome story. You'll get some practical help from it. So let's work through this story together. It starts in 2 Kings 5:1. Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master. Can't say that enough. Great man in the sight of his master, highly regarded, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. This commander of an enemy army, highly regarded because of what he did, highly regarded because he's a great soldier. He's a hero, but he had leprosy. He's great, but what? You know, depending on when you see someone and the circumstances they're in, you and I are usually acquainted with their victories more than we are their vulnerabilities, because people tend to hide those things. That's why I advocate a little bit of dating for young people before they get married, right? To see how this person's going to act in pressure situations, to get away from that dark candlelit dinner where everyone looks good in the dark, to the real light of life. My dad used to tell me and my brothers to bring our girlfriends home so he could kick the tires a little to see if they measured up. It's that old story about the young couple who were so in love, they just couldn't wait to get married. But as the day approached, they became more nervous because they had secrets they hadn't shared with each other. And the groom approached the minister and said, "I hate to admit this, but I need your advice." He said, "I have really smelly feet, and I don't know what to do about it. I don't want her to know that. She's never known that. I've never had my socks off." Minister said, "No problem. Wash your feet twice a day and wear socks to bed." I thought, well, that's brilliant. That's what I'll do. The nervous bride approached the preacher's wife and said, "I'm worried. I've got a secret and I've never told him. He doesn't know it." And she said, "What is it?" And the bride said, "I have really bad breath when I wake up in the morning and I don't want him to know it." And the minister's wife said, "Well, just set the alarm before he gets up. Use mouthwash. The key is to not say a word until he gets up." Beautiful ceremony. Everything went well. They're doing great for weeks and weeks until one night the man woke up to find out that one of his socks had come off under the covers. Well, he's frantic and he searches under the covers, which wakes up his wife, who without thinking early in the morning blurts out, "What are you doing?" To which he says, "Oh no, you swallowed my sock." I think I realize this because I'm a preacher. When I meet someone, I don't think I'm meeting the true you. Most people don't speak Hebrew and Greek all the time until they're talking to me. In front of me. My first impression is not as good as I thought it was. I used to say I have discernment, and now I'm more honest. I don't have a clue. And there's interesting signs that all is not as it appears. And maybe it's just me, but I've noticed when someone doesn't want you to know there's something else going on, their voice kind of goes up an octave. Have you noticed that? It really does. I'll say, well, how's Dan doing? And somebody says, well, he's great. Well, I know if somebody goes, well, he's great. There's a but what coming. It's like they're Axl Rose all of it. Well, he's great. Okay, but what? Everyone has two eyes, two ears, one nose, one neck, most people two arms, two legs, and everybody has at least one but what. Naaman was a great man. He's great. But he had leprosy. No one sees leprosy on the battlefield. Cover it with the armor. Still have it. Man wins millions in the lottery, but he has cancer. Football star has all the records, but he's addicted to drugs. Oh, you're great with people, but you don't take care of yourself. Oh, you're really good at succeeding, but really bad at being content. Well, I'm successful, but I'm miserable. I'm killing at work, but my 15-year-old barely knows me. I'm great with the people I'm around at work, but I can't get along with the people in my home. Listen, here's how you can know that you've had a good encounter with God. It's real, it's genuine, and it exposes your but what. So consider the story with three thoughts and three characters, all right? And we can move through this pretty good. Number one, let's talk about exposure. There's a little servant girl who doesn't get top billing, but maybe she should. 2 Kings 5, 2 and 3. Bands of raiders from Aram had gone out and had taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, if only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would be cured of his leprosy. Man, do I like this. God uses the most unlikely sources to get us what we need, doesn't he? Do you see what's going on here? We have a great man who has to take the advice of a little girl. And I don't know what her name is, but she's got some backbone, took some gumption, proving again, God uses people we would never even consider. I've given you my list before, right? Here's a general synopsis of who God uses in the Bible. Noah was drunk. Abraham was too old. Isaac was a daydreamer. Jacob was a liar. Leah was ugly. Joseph was abused. Moses had a stuttering problem. Gideon was afraid. Samson had long hair and was a womanizer. Rahab was a hooker. Elijah was suicidal. Isaiah preached naked. Jonah smelled like fish. Naomi was a widow. Job went bankrupt. John the Baptist ate bugs. Peter denied Jesus. The disciples fell asleep while praying. Martha worried about everything. The Samaritan woman was divorced more than once. Zacchaeus was too small. Paul was too religious. Timothy had an ulcer. And Lazarus, he was dead. And that's the cream of the crop. That's the cream of the crop. Every time I consider how in the world did I get in the position I'm in to be preaching to people, well, it's because God always chooses people nobody else would choose. That's why I'm where I'm at today. He can use a book, he can use a CD, he can use a sermon, he can use a neighbor, he can use a tragedy, he can use a co-worker, he can use a waitress, he can use somebody on the corner holding a sign, he can use a letter, he can use a feeling, he can use an opportunity, he can use a storm, he can use a tree in the middle of a garden, he can use an ark, he can use two stone tablets, he can use two beams of wood and three rusty nails, use a borrowed tomb, and he can use a slave girl in enemy territory to get done what he wants to be done. What it means is this. You have to be honest and come clean about the thing you've been hiding, that condition you didn't want anyone to see, the but what in your life. Because the truth has always been hiding and healing, they don't go together. There's something about exposure that can lead you back out of the shadow. And that leads to the second thought. Experience. There's a couple of kings here, and it's interesting what they do. So Naaman goes to his king and tells him what the little girl from Israel said, and here's what his king says. By all means, go, the king of Aram replied. His name is Ben-Hadad. I will send a letter to the king of Israel. His name is Jehoram. So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, 10 sets of clothing. He's going to buy his healing. The letter that he took to the king of Israel read, with this letter, I'm sending my servant Naaman to you, so that you may cure him of his leprosy. Now, there's all kinds of stuff wrong with that sentence. It's like the telephone game we played as kids. You remember that? Like at camp, you'd have 20 kids stand and you'd whisper something in the first kid's ear, and then he'd whisper and whisper and whisper on down the line till the last person tries to repeat the message that you started with? Nod at me if you know what I'm talking about. Never turned out right, did it? I mean, you might have started out with, I'm having chicken for lunch, and it ended up with, there's a cricket in the trunk. It gets jumbled. Chain of communication has polluted the man. This servant girl didn't tell the king, didn't say that her king could heal him, said a prophet could. This king can't do anything about this. Matter of fact, check out his response. As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes. Am I God? Can I kill and bring back? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of the leprosy? See how he's trying to pick a quarrel with me? I had a roommate in school who loved to make prank phone calls. I loved to, too. He was just better at it. And he would use an alias. He'd talk in a hillbilly voice. He was from Pennsylvania. He'd call and say, yeah, this is Jimmy Dean McDaniels. Jimmy Dean McDaniels. He said, my boy Bobby Dean, he's throwing up all over the shag carpet. We bought some milk in your store. It must be bad, some bad milk. He's throwing up all over the shag carpet. One time he called a guy. He said, yeah, I bought some trousers at your laundry. I brought some trousers to your laundromat, and you shrunk them, and now they're tied around my thighs, and I look like a European. Do I sound like a European to you? Every time he called somebody, the response would be the same. You know what the response was? What do you want me to do about it? That's what this king is saying. You brought me a leper? What do you want me to do about it? Let me stay on this verse for a minute because this is fascinating to me. This king's response is over the top. But you know why? Because there's history. This ain't about this opportunity. This is about everything that's led up to it. And any time he's had any interaction with this enemy king, he's being attacked. So now he's thinking, okay, there's more than meets the eye here. You ever wonder why you go off and it's inexplicable and the level of the offense doesn't match the level of your outrage? Why does that happen? You ever been in your car with the Hillcrest Christian license plate or wearing the t-shirt that says, I love my church, but because of the traffic you said some words that weren't, bless the Lord, oh my soul? What was that all about? Let me let you in on what I'm working through. I'm in this season of my life where I don't want to start blaming my environment or things I've been through or things that have happened to me on circumstances because the cross of Jesus gives me a new reality. And if I'm not careful, I'll be like this king who confronted with an impossible situation. All it did was remind him of a past hurt. He inflicted the opportunity of his present moment with the pain of his past. Listen, he can't separate the past from the present. I'm telling you this morning, if what you have gone through is not healed, you will treat opportunities when they come your way like they're attacks, and they're not. A few weeks ago, I mentioned some phobias. Remember that? You'll remember because one of them was fear of bald heads. Remember that? Were you here for that? I'm still afraid of those guys, by the way. Shout out for me what you're afraid of. All right, I had him do it in the early service, and it was interesting. Homer Grubb, I don't know if you know Homer. Homer yelled out, girls. And he's got to be, what, in his 80s? To which I said, well, girls are afraid of Homer, too. So it goes both ways. Somebody shout out what you're afraid of. Snakes, I'm with you, I'm with you, I'm with you. I get to Willie's every time I see one. What, Jim? Spiders. Big, tough guy. They're about that size. Come on. Gary? Did it scare you? Okay. Okay. Anybody else? Clowns. Yeah, they're creepy. I'm with you there, too. Anybody else? Heights. Okay. Not me. I can go as high as you want and fast as you want. I just can't go in circles. Pass on that. Anybody else? I say that again. Mosquitoes. I thought he said Doritos. I didn't understand that at all. Yeah, I don't care for them either, buddy. I did this exercise a few years ago at another church, and a lady yelled out, long sermons! And honestly, my relationship with my mom has never been the same since then. So fear creeps in, and one thing the Bible's crystal clear about, fear and faith can't share the same room. You know that, right? one has to go. And this king, he's so afraid of what had happened in the past that it affects his current situation. So here's my conclusion for myself. I don't often lose it with people. I don't. I can, and I have. But in those rare instances where I've lost it with someone, it really wasn't what they're doing right then. It's everything that led up to that. There's history there that has affected my response to my current situation. And so if I lose it like this king did, well, it ain't just about this moment. It's about how we got to this moment. So my conclusion, and it should be yours, say it with me if you agree. It's not you, it's me. Say it. It's not you, it's me. I'm a perfectionist of sorts. And if things aren't the way I thought they should be, I struggle, which leads to the last thought, expectation. Let's get to Naaman and the prophet. When I expect things to be one way and then they're another, I've always found that hard to deal with. But I'm not alone. And this is where the story turns practical. So he goes to the prophet, 2 Kings 5:8. When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent him this message. Check this. Here's his response. Why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me, and he'll know there's a prophet in Israel. How come the king looks at it one way and Elisha looks at it another? Same thing. Triggered fear in one, triggered faith in another. Elisha's like, send him to me. Hey, have him come over here. And he says that because he has an experience to build his expectation on. Elisha has healed the waters of Jericho. Elisha has multiplied the widow's oil. Elisha has raised a child from the dead. Elisha has dug ditches in dry valleys and seen God bring water. Elisha called some female bears out of the woods once to deal with the smart aleck teenagers who were making fun of his bald head. Tell me the Bible ain't cool. Elisha has seen God do things only God can do. So when an impossible situation comes, Elisha says, send him to me. Bring him to me. I got something for Naaman. I heal lepers for breakfast. Get him over here. I'll take care of it. Not because I'm great, but because I know somebody who is. 2 Kings 5:9. So Naaman went with his horses and chariots, stopped at the door of Elisha's house. This is where it becomes like a movie. Here he is. He's got his horses and chariots. I did some research. He traveled 90 miles to get here. 90 miles with his posse, with all that gold and silver, and stops outside of Elisha's house. I admire that he even went. That shows some faith. But I could have told you from reading the next verse, this ain't going to go well. Look at verse 10. Elisha sent a messenger to say to him, go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed. That ain't going to go well. He traveled 90 miles. He brought gold and silver. He wanted to see the prophet. The prophet don't even come out to talk to him. He sends a slave and says, you need to go dunk yourself 7 times in our river. And pride kicks in. And Naaman's thinking, I'd rather go home with my leprosy. I'd rather die than be disrespected like this. Listen, if you want to be cleansed, sometimes you got to do what doesn't make sense to you. You know why? Because there's no cure for leprosy. There's no cure for it. It can only be cleansed. You and I are in the same position. Every time I get in that water, I'm reminded. There's no cure for sin. There's no antidote. It's got to be cleansed. And look how verse 11 starts. Here it is again. But, now I'm going to preach a sermon series called all the big buts in the Bible. But Naaman went away angry and said, how about this? I highlighted these two words years ago. I thought that he would surely come out to meet me and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spot and say, abracadabra, and cure me of my leprosy. And are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed? In other words, I didn't have to travel 90 miles to hear this. So he turned off and he went in a rage. And the guys around him are like, okay, that's all we got to do? We got to keep our gold and our silver? That's all we got to do? Just got to get in the river? And Naaman is like, you want me to do what? No thanks. When your heart is filled with pride, you want to write your own prescriptions, don't you? You want God to come through, but on your terms. It has to look like this. Should go like this. I expect God to do it like this. The opportunity I want, God needs to respond like this. So Naaman gets mad, and out of his mouth come what I think are the two most dangerous words we could ever use. I thought. Well, so what? So what? What you thought. Doesn't matter what the God of your imagination might say to you. All that matters is what the God of heaven has said. Listen to me. I think sometimes we conclude if we can just get close to following God and doing what he says in regards to salvation, that's enough. But for me, 99.9, that ain't enough for me when I'm talking about eternity. A fellow from Kentucky walked into an accounting firm to apply for a job. Many had applied. It's in central Kentucky. Can't require a whole lot of smarts to be an accountant at an accounting firm in central Kentucky, I wouldn't think. So there was one question on the test. What's 3 times 3? Well, he wrote down 10, and he turned his paper in. And he went home, and on the way home, he checked it on the calculator to see if he was right. And, of course, he realized, oh, no, I was wrong. I was wrong. There's no way I'm getting the job. Well, the next week, they called him, offered him the job. He said, seriously, I get the job, considering my answer was wrong? And they said, yeah, because you were the closest. Listen, when it comes to salvation, you better make sure. Close doesn't count. If your thought doesn't match God's thought, then you need to get a new thought. Do you know what God has to say about your thoughts and my thoughts? God says, my thoughts are not your thoughts. My ways are not your ways. So Naaman had expectations, and he's ready to leave. He's ready to go home. He'd rather his arm fall off than have to swallow his pride and do what this prophet told him to do. And that's when another servant speaks up, and this dude needs a raise. Check out what he said. It's the last verse, next to the last verse we'll look at. Naaman's servants went to him and said, my father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? Answer, yeah. How much more then, when he tells you, wash and be cleansed? I love the nerve of this servant. And there always comes a line in the sand, and the line is defined this way. Your condition is so bad, you're willing to do whatever it takes to make it better. Let me tie this with the last verse, but let me introduce you to this guy first. This guy is Lawrence Ripple. He robbed a bank recently to get away from his wife. Walked into a bank in Kansas City, held it up at gunpoint, told a teller, fill the bag with money. And when she did, he told her, I'm going to sit over here and I want you to call the police. Mr. Ripple sat in the lobby with his bag of money waiting for the police to come and arrest him. Did try to get away, just waited. They cuffed him, and the officer asked, why didn't you run? Lawrence Ripple said, I'd rather go to jail than go back home. At his sentencing, I love this judge. The judge sentenced him to 6 months of house arrest. I'd love to high-five that judge. That's awesome. That's going to extremes to get out of a bad situation. Naaman has a choice to make. Ride home and live out his life with leprosy or swallow his pride and do what God told him to do. And here's the last verse. He went down, dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times. As the man of God had told him, his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. Now, I would love to preach about baptism right now. You think Naaman understood why in the world he needed to get in the water for this to happen? He didn't. Did it matter that he didn't understand? It didn't. All that mattered is he did what God told him to do, right? And this was not a progressive miracle. He goes down once, he comes up, and I guarantee you, human nature, he's looking like, I don't see anything changing yet. 2, 3, 4, surely. Golly, it's just exactly like it was. 5, 6. It ain't even starting to change. What I got to lose? 7th time comes up and immediately. You got to have the faith to go through the motions. Even when you don't see any evidence. Faith to pray again. Faith to lift your hands and worship again. The faith to say, I don't feel a thing right now. But I know God's with me. God's for me. Who can be against me? I won't fear. The Lord is my helper. I lift my eyes to the hills from which cometh my help. Naaman, the mighty soldier, the hero. But what? But he had leprosy. Well, not anymore. Not anymore. When I was in high school, I was the president of our youth group at church, which carried no benefits with it, other than I made the other kids call me Mr. President. We had a treasurer. I don't know why. We didn't spend money or buy anything or have any money, but we were official. And we had a revival preacher who talked to us about evangelism. So I mobilized our youth group at our tiny church and said, we're going to go canvass the town of Cross Plains and invite people to church. We're not going to take the adults with us. We're just going to do it ourselves. Everybody was in. It was cool. I knocked on the door of a house in Cross Plains that I'd never been to, and a guy answered the door, and his name was Jim. He didn't have church. Never had accepted Jesus. We hit it off. I liked him. He liked me. There was a but what with Jim, though. He'd been injured fighting overseas and had no use of his legs in a wheelchair. And there was another but what. He was a big-time alcoholic. And he had nobody and nothing but his alcohol and his regret and sorrow. And I asked a couple of men at church if they'd pick him up and bring him to church because he was willing to come. It was awesome. First time he came, they parked his wheelchair right down by the piano so he could watch me play. And I keep looking at him, and he's smiling at me. It was just cool. He started talking to me about his struggle with alcohol. And he allowed me to get him some help. And one day I asked some of the adults about the possibility of getting him baptized. Shame on them. All I got was negativity. Well, how are we going to do that? How are we going to do that? He probably don't even want that. Again, shame on them for telling me God's probably okay with him. God understands his heart. God knows he's sincere and wants to do it and that he can't do it. Why are you coming at me with all that stuff? He wants to be baptized. Baptize him. Me and my dad and two other guys, Kenny and Rick, who were elders at the church, went to Jim's house and filled his bathtub with water. It was cool. We picked him up. I had an arm. My dad had an arm. They had his legs, just dead weight, and we laid him under the water, and my dad let me say the words. I didn't screw it up and merge it with any wedding vows this time. I said the right thing. Pulled him up out of the water, and man, the smile on his face. And he immediately grabbed me by my shirt and pulled me into the tub with him. There's something you don't see at many baptisms. It was so awesome. Naaman, Jim, me, you. You know what the greatest but what in the Bible is? It's 1 Corinthians 6. Don't you realize that those who do wrong will not inherit the kingdom of God? By the way, that includes all of us. Don't fool yourselves. Those who indulge in sexual sin, who worship idols, commit adultery, male prostitutes, practice homosexuality, and you're feeling pretty good because you're not in that group? Well, thieves, greedy people, drunkards, abusive, cheat. None of these, none of you, none of us will inherit the kingdom of God. Some of you were once like that. But what? But you were cleansed. You were made holy. You were made right with God by calling on the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and by the Spirit of our God. There are times I look back and think, man, I needed to cover my butt and my butt want. Jesus has covered my butt want. Amen.